Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Amdocs First Quarter 2017 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance while the conference is in progress, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone to reach an operator. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the floor over to Matthew Smith, Head of Investor Relations for Amdocs. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Karen. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2016, filed on December 12, 2016. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to anyone joining us on the call today. We are pleased with our first quarter results, which reflect record revenue above the midpoint of our guidance, adjusting for currency, as well as consistent execution across multiple dimensions of our business. For instance, we maintain a high win rate, which including pivotal transformation deals with Vodafone Italy and with a leading communication service provider in Southeast Asia. We renewed managed services arrangements with several customers that strengthen the basis on which we expect to expand the scope of future activities. We made significant progress in the field of network function virtualization, NFV, one of our important long-term growth engines. The majority of fiscal 2017 still lies ahead of us, and we are cognizant of the ongoing challenges presented by the global macroeconomics and industry environment in which we operate. That said, our strong quarter one results and the visibility provided by our unique business model now supports a slightly stronger outlook for constant currency revenue growth this year. This outlook also appears more balanced across regions than we originally anticipated. With that in mind, let me review our first quarter performance on a geographical basis. Beginning with North America, we saw further signs of stabilization as we supported strategic initiatives for customers such as Charter Communications. As we highlighted on our Analyst and Investor Day in mid-December, Amdocs solutions and services are playing a key role in helping Charter provide a uniform and enhanced customer experience following its acquisition of Time Warner Cable and Brighthouse Networks. Regarding the outlook for North America, let me take a moment to share our thoughts on three major trends we believe will affect the North American market dynamics over the next several quarters. First, the modernization trends among pay TV providers is gradually translating into new awards for Amdocs, including those we recently mentioned with the two largest MSOs in North America. These important projects, which are incorporated in our fiscal 2017 outlook, should create a base for stronger growth in fiscal 2018 and beyond. Progress on those projects supports our assertion that Amdocs is in the strongest position to enable North American pay TV providers to modernize their IT in the coming years. Second, we believe the marriage of mobile connectivity with video is rapidly emerging as an essential long-term strategy for North American large integrated carriers. AT&T's recent service of DirecTV Now and its plan to add more premium content through the acquisition of Time Warner is a good demonstration of this trend. We see this as a next stage in the evolution of the integrated carrier. The potential opportunity of these trends for Amdocs is not reflected in our outlook, but we believe in the overall direction, and as such, we are continuing to invest in R&D and M&A, such as our recent acquisition of Indicia, to support the future needs of our customers. Third, we expect to see continued industry consolidation in North America, permutation of which are impossible to predict. As we have said many times before, industry consolidation often present long-term opportunities for Amdocs, but also create short-term uncertainties which can affect the discretionary spending of our customers. To summarize North America, the long-term market dynamics remain positive, but our immediate outlook still holds many unmoving parts and unknowns, including those resulting from customer consolidation activities already in progress or which may be contemplated in the future. Moving to Europe, revenue grew sequentially on the constant currency basis. During the quarter, Vodafone Italy selected Amdocs CS10 as the preferred solution for its BSS transformation across the different lines of businesses. This pivotal project, which resulted from a highly competitive bid process, follows our recent project award with other Vodafone Group affiliates, on which we are now diligently focused on bringing to production. Additionally, we extended the several important managed services relationship in quarter one, which strengthened the basis on which we can expand our future business. BT, the largest service provider in the UK, has awarded Amdocs 5-year service extension agreement, positioning Amdocs as a strategic partner to BT following its acquisition of EE. Under this agreement, we will continue to support Amdocs-based business and operational support systems being used by BT across its fixed, more broadband, and EE mobile lines of businesses, including Amdocs Kina. Additionally, Rostelecom, Russia's national communication service provider, awarded Amdocs a 5-year service extension agreement following the consolidation of Rostelecom customer management systems on Amdocs CES. Regarding the outlook in Europe, we continue to see opportunities for growth on multiple fronts by leveraging the strategic position of our highly relevant product and services offering. Turning finally to the rest of the world, revenue grew sequentially as we focused on progressing several highly complex projects towards production. During quarter one, we also secured a meaningful end-to-end digital transformation project with a leading communication service provider in Southeast Asia, who is investing heavily to improve customer experience. This award solidifies and strengthens our position in the region. Moreover, it represents the first instance of a former Converse customer choosing to fully modernize on Amdocs CS10, and it is, therefore, another proof point to support the rationale for acquiring the Converse BSS asset. We also saw continued business momentum with other former Converse customers during quarter one, several of which have recently extended their maintenance service agreement with Amdocs, such as Algar Telecom in Brazil. Similarly, Oi in Brazil has signed on for system software enhancement with Amdocs. Regarding our outlook, we expect the rest of the world to grow in fiscal 2017, although regional economics, foreign currency movement, and lengthy decision-making cycles in Latin America are now presenting incremental headwind relative to our original expectations. We remind you, however, that that growth in Southeast Asia is expected to outpace Latin America for the full year. Overall, quarterly trends are likely to remain lumpy given the project orientation of our customer engagement in the rest of the world markets. With my regional summary complete, let me update you on our recent progress in the field of network function virtualization, where we are the first IT company to invest and subsequently lead. First, we recently announced the partnership with the Linux Foundation to accelerate the global adoption of AT&T Ecom platform by making it open source and available to service providers and cloud developers in 2017. Second, Orange Polska and MDocs this week announced the industry-first project to test and assess open-source eComp in live cloud environment, initially for virtual services with residential customers in Poland, and then globally across Orange footprint. We believe our selection for this project as the technology integrator reflects the unique knowledge, software capabilities, and industry expertise we bring as a result of our co-development of eComp with AT&T. We are excited to validate the capacities and potential benefits of eComp deployment within the Orange network. On a different front, we are also pleased to report positive signs of business momentum across the three digital-related acquisitions we completed last September. For instance, at Fontis, we have signed a number of deals, new deals, including with Smart Communication in the Philippines. Fontis' contextual digital engagement technology enables service providers to quickly launch and manage cross-channel, personalized market campaigns that leverage analytics to offer customers the most appropriate service at the right time on the right channel. To wrap up, we are encouraged by our solid start of fiscal 2017. Combined with the visibility provided by our record 12-month backlog, we now expect to deliver fiscal 2017 revenue growth within the range of 2.5% to 6.5% on a constant currency basis. Note that this guidance does not reflect the potential impact of future customer consolidation activity which may take place in North America. At the same time, we committed to maintain stable operating margins and maximizing free cash flow, the majority of which we still plan to return to shareholders, while retaining capacity to execute M&A as opportunities arise. Taking everything into consideration, we remain on track to deliver diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 4.5% to 8.5% for the full fiscal year 2017. With that, I will turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. First fiscal quarter revenue of $955 million was the midpoint of our guidance range of $935 million to $975 million. Despite a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $7 million relative to the fourth fiscal quarter of 2016. Our first quarter guidance range had included a marginal sequential negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations. Revenue performance was therefore above the midpoint of our expectations after adjusting for the foreign currency fluctuations. Our first fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.2%, an increase of 10 basis points compared to the fourth fiscal quarter of 2016, and within the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.4% to 17.4%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $2.8 million in Q1, primarily reflecting foreign exchange movements. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 90 cents in Q1 at the midpoint of our guidance range of 87 cents to 93 cents. Our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 17.2% in Q1 was slightly above the high end of the annual target range of 13 to 17%, consistent with our guidance. Diluted GAAP EPS was 66 cents for the first fiscal quarter, towards the high end of our guidance range of 59 to 67 cents. Free cash flow was $127 million in Q1. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $168 million, less $41 million in net capital expenditures and others. As we disclosed at our analyst and investor briefing in mid-December, we expect to generate free cash flow of approximately $500 million in fiscal 2017. Additionally, we remind you that free cash flow in the second fiscal quarter is typically lower due to timing of annual bonus payments. DSO of 82 days increased by 3 days, quarter over quarter. This is above our normal range and reflects timing differences between revenue recognition, the invoicing of customers, and cash collections at the end of the first fiscal quarter. As an added point of disclosure, cash collections have been healthy in the early part of our second fiscal quarter. Total unbilled receivables increased by $15 million as compared to the fourth fiscal quarter of 2016. Our total deferred revenue, both short and long term, decreased by $7 million sequentially in Q1. The net movement in unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue reflects our high level of transformation project activity and resulting timing differences between the revenue recognition and the invoicing of customers during the first fiscal quarter. Our cash balance at the end of first fiscal quarter was approximately $0.9 billion. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $3.18 billion at the end of first fiscal quarter, up $10 million sequentially from the end of prior quarter. During the first fiscal quarter, we repurchased $80 million of our ordinary shares under our current authorization of $750 million. We had $517 million remaining under that authorization as of December 31st. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $940 million to $980 million for the second fiscal quarter of 2017. Embedded within this guidance, we anticipate a negligible sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q1. For the full 2017 fiscal year, we now expect total revenue growth within the range of 2.5 to 6.5% on a constant currency basis, which is higher than our previously guided range of roughly 2 to 6%. On a reported basis, we now expect revenue growth in the range of 1.5 to 5.5% for the full fiscal year. This new range includes an anticipated drag from foreign currency fluctuations of about 1% year over year, relative to the exchange rates prevailing at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter, 2016. Our previous revenue guidance had assumed a negligible impact from foreign currency movements in fiscal 2017. Incorporated within this outlook and consistent with our prior expectations, we anticipate revenue from our directory business in fiscal 2017 to place a drag of about 1% on the total company results. We continue to anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal 2017 to be at the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.4 to 17.4%. As a reminder, operating margins may fluctuate within our long-term target range from quarter to quarter. We continue to expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be within our target range of 13 to 17% for the full fiscal year 2017. We expect the second fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of 90 cents to 96 cents. Our second fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 148 million shares and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the first quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we are on track to deliver diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 4.5 to 8.5%. Our full year EPS outlook does factor in expected repurchase activity over the year. As Ellie indicated earlier, we plan to return a majority of our free cash flow to shareholders through our ongoing share repurchases and dividend program in fiscal year 2017. With that, we can turn back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star followed by the number one key on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or if you'd like to remove your line from the queue, you may press the pound key. To allow as many people as possible the opportunity to ask a question, we ask that you limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. Our first question for today comes from the line of Shaul Eyal from Oppenheimer.
Thank you. Good afternoon, guys. Congrats on continued solid execution. I know, Ellie, you've touched on the e-com topic during your prepared remarks, but I want to spend another minute on the topic. In my view, it is becoming very important, crucial, longer term. So as you mentioned, I believe earlier this week, you've announced a collaboration with Orange. I think that was in Poland. A few weeks back, you've announced the Linux collaboration, also on the e-com front. I recall one of the advantages of the eComp announcement with AT&T last year was the fact that there's no exclusivity here, so you can take it in any direction. So my question is, how many additional large service providers and strategic partners are looking at eComp right now, and how do you see your NFV ecosystem developing in 2017 and beyond?
So, Shaul, it's evolving. It's evolving fast. So anything that I'm telling you today may change, I think, to the better in the future. The way it looks right now, it seems like people, that is to say communication service provider around the world, are getting more excited about the idea that eComp may turn to be some kind of a standard. Since the standard bodies cannot move as fast as we can, this is the IEEE or ETSI and other standard bodies, we believe that adoption of eComp is quite important for the future of eComp and beyond AT&T and others. So the fact that Orange announced it already, and the fact that Bell Canada announced already that they are looking into it and may adopt it, is a very good sign. There are several other major carriers around the world that are looking into open eComp as a standard for them. And I think that more companies will join this consortium, so to speak, as we speak. We believe as an IT company, we have a significant advantage because we develop, significant parts of it. And we hold the type of engineers that are required for additional development, for execution, for the enterprise version of it, the testing of it, and many, many other services around it. Now, since it's only in the beginning, it's a topic in its infancy, as a matter of fact. It's hard for us to quantify it, but the trend is positive. I think the speed is also picking up, and I expect other companies to other communication service providers to follow. Hopefully, while they are following, we will be able to take along our services and capabilities and create more projects like the one that we just announced with Orange in Poland, but the overall direction is to implement the same services across the Orange network.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shu.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Ashwin Shirvaikar from Citibank.
Thank you, and my congratulations as well on the on the quarter. I guess I wanted to ask you. You had your first success here with Converse. Is there more detail potentially available on the sizing of what happens when a traditional Converse client takes up sort of the full MDocs portfolio? In terms of this contract size as well as scope, ability, what kind of ramps. That seems like a fairly complex, given the simplicity of the platform that they're on, seems like a fairly complex long-term project. So I'm trying to figure out size, timing, things like that.
So Ashwin, it's a very good question. Let me try to shed some light in comparison. When we are talking about an end-to-end CS platform, we are talking about at least four or five major components, which includes the revenue management, the customer management, in this case, the digital component, self-service, e-commerce, and so on and so forth, product catalog, ordering, and a few others. When you compare it to the Converse assets, primarily Converse assets is a revenue management engine. So by definition, transforming a company that had a Converse as a revenue management component before, if it's an end-to-end, it's a bigger than the Converse spec. Specifically, this project is complex one. It's on high speed or short duration of transformation. It includes the digital in front of it, as well as all the other components that I just mentioned. So it's bigger than average deals. It's a good indication because we saw, you know, some additional services that we sold to Converse, former customers. We sold some services. We're adding add-ons like Pontis or other components. But this is kind of the first indication that we have that from the top customers of Converse, some of them will transform to CS 10 over time, and this is a very good indication that that you know kind of solidify this this vision.
Okay, that's good to know. On the rest of world growth, I missed what you said for what the growth expectation exact number was, and can you explain the dynamics of why there are delays in LATAM, if I heard you right. Also, over time, is there a chance to convert rest of world to more of a managed services instead of project-oriented market?
So for the first component of the question on rest of the world, I would say that we have basically predicted that a couple of quarters ago, and we've seen some kind of a variation between the two ends of the world, so to speak. Okay, the two emerging markets. While Asia Pacific, because of you know regulations in India, because of a more competitive market in Indonesia and Malaysia and other places, and Korea and other places, we see more bids and more activities going on across the region, including Thailand, including other places. We see less of this in Latin America in recent quarters. I think some of it will come back. So, now, some of the delays that I'm talking about in Latin America fluctuates. The macroeconomics in Latin America right now, specifically in Brazil and Mexico, which are the two largest economies, are not so good. So it affects, obviously, the pace of decisions. If you add to that, you know, political stability or instability in some other countries, it affects the overall region. But we have seen this region fluctuating in terms of the macroeconomics and the cycles before. And we're just, you know, and it changes almost on a quarterly basis. So we're just basically saying that everything that we said before, at least twice in the analyst day and previous quarter, of the different dynamics of the different two markets, which comprise the rest of the world, we see more of it. Overall, rest of the world will be a growth engine in 2017, and even this prediction that I just depicted may change in a quarter or two. The overall growth of rest of the world would not be as strong as it was in previous years. And again, it's something that we alluded to already in the analyst day, but we see it even stronger in the last couple of months, which is a good thing, that at the end of the day, we see a much more balanced growth dynamics among the three major regions, if you want to call it this way. If in the past 2 years we had relatively slow growth sometimes no growth in North America, and we compensated with that with a strong, sometimes very strong growth in rest of the world and somewhat in the middle in Europe. Now we see dynamics that we see growth in North America, in Europe, and in rest of the world in different maybe pace altogether that reflects the projection that we are giving with a slight raise of the guidance. So altogether, I think it's actually a good thing. And
Ashwin, on the managed services point, we definitely believe this is the ideal conversion we would like to see, where typically a relationship with a customer would start through a modernization and transformation, and later on, as the relationship are being built and we show the value, the customer will adopt the managed services model. We see more and more indications that this can be done also in the rest of the world region as well as Europe. For some examples we shared in the past. Yet, we have not converted all of our customers, of course, to managed services, so the potential is definitely there. And in the cases where we've done so, we already start to see, again, it's still relatively small size because of our relatively late entry into those regions, but we already see even renewal points coming up and extensions and expansion of the managed services activity with customers that we've managed to shift into that model.
And the timing is also reasonably fit to the model because it takes few good years to create the you know stability of the operation and the trust in the region, so to speak. And we've been you know we've been in these regions for in a serious way only in the last few years. So you can expect this trend to take some time. It took us some the same amount of time in North America, in Europe, and so on. So we expect it to happen. We see some of it already. Some of it happened. But I think it will continue to happen, and as Tamar said, you know, the dynamics and the characteristics are very similar to what we see from other places of the world. So we are quite encouraged that we can eventually have a more significant managed services business in the rest of the world as well, both rest of the world.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jason Kupferberg from Jefferies.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just wanted to start with a question about the uptick in the constant currency revenue growth guidance here. I know you called out some further signs of stabilization in North America, and I think you mentioned some newer work with Charter. I mean, is that the primary dynamic here, driving that 50 basis point increase, or did something get incrementally better outside the U.S. as well?
It's a combination of things, I would say, but the indications we're having from North America stabilization as well as the progress we're seeing with the pay TV market in North America is definitely a good sign. But there wasn't any singular event we should point out in that context. I would say more combination of a couple of things.
Okay. And just on the prospects of U.S. tax reform. Are there any implications for Amdocs? I mean, as a foreign filer, I'm not sure exactly how it might impact you, or you know, not just corporate tax reform. If there's border tax adjustment or things like that that end up getting enacted, what are some of the scenarios we should be considering?
So I think it's still too early to understand, you know, which one of the tax reforms. You know, if you're looking on the House. Proposals versus Trump campaigns. You know, of course, there are many variations there. But in general, I would say, given the fact we are a multinational that is not domiciled through the U.S., our situation is different naturally than the maybe the other companies you're looking at. And what we're seeing in general around tax and then taking it to the broader global perspective is definitely more and more attention globally on the topic, coming from the EU all the way now to the U.S. awakening to talk about that, and of course, other countries as well. So it's something we're tracking very carefully. You know, we cannot predict all permutations of legislation that will go through, but given what we know now, we believe the range we've provided of 13 to 17% is a reasonable range to look forward to.
And just last quick one, the Vodafone Italy transformational deals there, I mean, are those needle-moving this year? I mean, is that a little bit of a contributor to the guidance raised too? I was just trying to get a sense of the size, given that they are in that transformational bucket.
I would say somewhat, but given nature of how transformation projects work, you need to consider the fact that usually it starts with, you know, high-level design and then the detailed design where this is not the vast majority of revenue. Actually, the mass and the vast majority of revenue comes later in as the pickup of work begins. So maybe, you know, in this case, for example, it should have an impact more towards the latter part of the year. But in general, it is a sizable project. It's something that we are definitely encouraged to see and very focused, of course, in general on the Vodafone Group and our execution ability there.
As Tamar said, Jason, as Tamar said, the guidance is comprised out of many, many small details. But obviously, two major projects with two of the largest MSOs in North America, and a lot of projects with Vodafone, and many projects with Telefonica, and so on and so forth. It adds up to this thing. So it's the raise itself is a combination of many things. The wins that we mentioned are, and we use the word pivotal, is because they are because of size, but also because of importance in terms of transforming a whole market. We've seen it when we entered the Indonesian market or when we entered the Dutch market, whatever. I mean, the first project in such a market is usually quite significant for the market. And surprisingly, this is our first project in Italy. So in terms of size, we have some projects, of course, and some Kenyan assets there and so on, so forth, but in terms of size. So it has many dimensions why it's important. It mainly means that we would sweat some more to execute this project along the other projects that we have.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Tom Roderick from Stifel.
Hey guys, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. So Ellie, can you clarify your comments on just how North American M&A might be impacting your outlook today? I mean, obviously there's been plenty of rumored combinations, but of course nothing that's official or on the tape yet. But are you already seeing an impact in customer spend, or do you anticipate seeing that this year as perhaps some of those customers prepare for or contemplate potential combinations? Or are you just simply reminding us that hey, your customers do from time to time engage in M&A, and when that happens, they often take a pause in spending? Can you just clarify your comments there?
Yes, it's not that we see right now significant slowdown or acceleration per se. On the other hand, I actually strongly believe that the major MSOs of North America are investing in their customer experience infrastructure for the long term, and maybe even beyond the pure plain cable services. Both Charter and Comcast and DirecTV and the other companies are becoming more and more integrated carriers. They have broadband, they have video, they have content in a growing way. And they may, and they all have accelerating the mobility component. If they may decide to accelerate mobility to the level of acquisition, there are a few assets available in North America by the name of T-Mobile and Sprint. And I'm not trying to speculate, but I would not be surprised if these two companies will try to merge mobility and video and maybe later stage content to create the same integrated carrier vision that AT&T has in North America, that Vodafone has in other places, and so on and so forth. So it's not like we are seeing specifically immediately related activities. But I think that my analysis of the reason why we see this type of transformation in the MSOs has to do with potentially preparing themselves for M&A in different shapes. Now in Charter, it's clear that already it's given, and it's in the broadband and video space. But Charter also is accelerating its MVNO capabilities, and as such, we think that there is a potential for more business there. Comcast may do it for different reasons, and DirecTV have their own view. So each one of them is doing it differently. And, of course, the market will have a lot of rumors of almost any permutation you can think of. But we believe that the integrated carrier is the direction of the market all around the world, especially in North America. And that's basically what we try to share with you.
Outstanding. That's really helpful. The second question I had for you, Ellie, here is just on the topic of Charter itself. You highlighted that win as one of the reasons why North America is looking up and you're raising your constant currency guidance. Can you just talk a little bit more about what it is exactly you're doing for Charter, understanding that they have a pretty complex and fragmented back-end billing environment across Charter, Time Warner, Bright House? Where do you sort of sit in that hierarchy and or perhaps sitting over the top of it? What will that offering look like as you work with Charter going forward here?
Well, it's not that they have a very complex and sophisticated back end. They have a very old one. That's the only thing that they can say about it is that it's very old, and they understand it. It's a limit or limitation, or it's a potentially slowdown for their progress. So basically, the idea in Charter, because they have three companies that need to integrate, is that we are building with their IT a platform that encapsulates the entire system that is wrapping basically the old legacy. Some legacy will be replaced, some legacy will be just be wrapped, and all the rest of the layers are completely new components of CES 10 components, like such as product catalog, customer management, digital, and so on and so forth. So basically, we believe that we are building the future architecture of Charter, and it's a quite significant project for them and for us, and it's a quite important one because it allows Charter to have a look and feel of a modern digital company, despite the fact that they bought few assets, and that is expendable also for if they would do other acquisition or move faster into new areas. So that's more or less what we're doing in Charter, and the rest of it, I'm afraid you'll have to ask Charter to give more details because I'm not sure that they want the whole architecture out there.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Will Power from Baird.
Great, thanks. Yeah, just a couple of follow-up questions. Maybe just to come back, to Vodafone. It seems like these different Vodafone properties kind of percolate from time to time. And I guess I'm just trying to get a sense for, whether we could see the Vodafone opportunity accelerate in other regions. How many more regions are there to work with? Maybe just give us a sense for the scale of the upside opportunity there, because it seems there's still a lot of, whether it's in the northern side or there are a number of different properties you're not, touching actively today.
Of Vodafone, you mean?
Of Vodafone, yes.
Within the Vodafone group, yeah. And look, it's a huge and fantastic company. Very intelligent company too, and they work in many, many markets. We do a lot of activities with Vodafone in India, which is a very important growth engine for them. In India, they have 22 markets, or 22, they call it circles, all consolidated on Amdocs CES platform. With some managed services activities and so on and so forth. We have a lot of activities with Vodafone, basically end-to-end entire CS9 in the Netherlands for postpaid and prepaid. And now Vodafone is contemplating to join forces with Ziggo as a cable company or a video, which is a joint venture with LGI, Liberty Global. We have a lot of activities in the UK, a lot of activities in the mobility only in Germany, in Turkey, in Greece, in Spain, mobility and Ono. I mean, like, I can go on and on and on. And we have a lot of activities in Vodafone. We usually talk usually about the recent projects. And we are now working, as I said, diligently to execute some of the recent wins from the last year, and preparing in parallel to this new project in Vodafone Italy that we take very, very seriously. So it's a significant project for all parties involved, and we are definitely very proud to win it. It was a long process, highly competitive. You can expect something of this size in the middle of for Vodafone in the heart of Europe. You would expect anyone and his wife to show up for the bid, and the fact that we won it is a great vindication for our strength.
I would just add to that, Eli, that there are multiple dimensions of growth. One that you mentioned is to sell into new affiliates of the Vodafone Group. But other important dimensions of growth for us within the Vodafone Group could be selling additional product modules. For example, if we sold our customer management capabilities in a certain affiliate and now they're thinking about how they're moving to the digital front end in a multi-channel way. Or any managed services could be, for example, an expansion of the footprint within a certain affiliate. So there could be different dimensions of growth for us within Vodafone where adding new logos within the group is just one of them.
Well, okay, unless they will keep on buying companies, you know, eventually the number of logos are finite, of course.
Just thinking about other products generally, and not just within Vodafone, I mean, I'm not sure I've heard an update on this recently, but, you know, thinking about, I think it was about 3 years ago, you completed the CellSite and Actis acquisitions to move more into, I don't know, RF engineering, network management. Any update as to how, you know, those products are working? Or are those often integrated in some of these new wins? Just maybe any updated thoughts on the momentum there?
Well, so you see, in general, first of all, I'll give you the general answer. In general, the more offering we add, the more potential we have to expand our relationship over time with customers. Because if in the past we have mainly revenue management and customer management, and then we added ordering and then OSS and then radio optimization and then e-commerce and on, the notion is that the industry is relatively concentrated by the nature of it and becoming even more concentrated. So the logic that we have is that we want to expand into new buying centers with the different vehicles and different tools that we are either developing or acquiring or both. And we've seen it in many customers, such as AT&T, such as certain companies within the Vodafone, Telefonica, and others. Specifically on the radio optimization, RAN optimization, we're actually progressing quite nicely. We developed a few more features of this product in recent years. And we're expanding with some specific customers, not all around our customer base, so that's eventually potential. You have to remember that in most cases, this subject is usually part of the radio network itself that one of the NEPs would sell to a given communication service provider. So if someone sell, let's say Nokia sell their equipment to Telefonica, then they will have initially the network optimization from Nokia in this case. But over the years, we added more and more features into our radio optimization, and it became the strongest in the industry. But it's a slow process to convince network guys to turn over such a delicate and important function in the network to an independent supplier like us. Specifically, I would say one of the areas that we see great success is in Latin America, and specifically within Latin America, even more so with America Mobile than with anyone else. América Móvil is really running a very tight ship when it comes to network deployment, network optimization, optimization on the broader context, not only the radio access, but also the backhaul, and so on and so forth. So they are very advanced and like an early adapter of new technologies, and we have a great progress with them. But we have it in many other places, and I believe it will keep on expanding. So that's just one more vehicle that we have that we can sell eventually also to Vodafone in certain geographies. And each one of the geographies will act differently because it's a regional decision. It doesn't have to be a corporate decision.
Thank you. And once again, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Sterling Auty from JP Morgan.
Hi, guys. This is Jackson Ader on for Sterling tonight. Just quick questions from us. What specifically drove the cash collection issues in this quarter?
I would say it's collection as much as it's about the gap that we have within transformational projects between the pace of recognizing revenue based on progress of the project and when you hit the invoicing milestone, which is a natural thing that is just built into the project lifecycle. So it's not a matter of having an issue in getting cash out of our customers once the invoice is due. It's more about when we are getting into that, and that's also reflected, if you've seen, in the change we talked about in the and build AR, which is another reflection of the same point.
Gotcha. And then, so would we probably expect the seasonal cadence in free cash flow through the year? I know we expect a sequential drop in the second quarter, but probably, is it safe to assume it may not be as exaggerated as it has been in years past?
I think you should look at it more as a stronger half two, just because of the natural seasonality we usually have in Q2 with the bonuses payments done. So therefore, if you look from the trend point of view within the year, second half is stronger.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, and that concludes our question and answer session for today. I would like to turn the conference back over to Amdocs for any additional comments.
Thank you very much for joining our call this evening and for your continued interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please give us a call at the Investor Relations group. And with that, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.